BBC Natural World. The sun hanging low on the horizon over a vast savanna at the Olpejeta Conservancy in Kenya. In a small hut, a man's making a hot drink on a stove. He says, I work from 6 a.m. in the morning to 6 p.m., so I spend most of my time with him. Wearing a green zookeeper's uniform, he steps outside into a pen lined by wooden stakes. He says, Sudan is the most wonderful rhino, and he's also my great friend.
Sudan, come on, boy.
Tentatively, Sudan edges out of his enclosure and inches towards the man who's carrying a bucket. He says, I'm just applying mud on his body. This helps to cool Sudan's body temperature down, and he loves that. We really take great care of him, just like elderly people. He's doing fine, but anything might happen at any time. As the keeper rubs mud over Sudan, another man watches from behind a fence. The keeper says, this is very serious. Something needs to be done.
This is the remarkable story of an animal who survived the destruction of the rest of his species. He's traveled the globe from the open savannas of Africa to a closed world behind the Iron Curtain. Now, as the very last male of his kind, he's become an unwitting celebrity in an astonishing modern-day fable.
The whole story is not only about animals, but it's a story about our human nature.
And the focus of a battle to save a species we've pushed to the very brink of extinction.
You look at that great big lumbering dinosaur and you think, hey, what did we do wrong? Why did we end up in this crazy situation?
Sudan, the last of the rhinos. Giraffes lope across a savanna, elephants clump through a field, and zebras roam over grassland. Two vans filled with tourists.
Sudan is inside the pen, and we will maintain the right hand side, and we will avoid talking. We will talk when we come out of Sudan. So maybe one person at a time can have a chance to have a photo with Sudan.
It's amazing for us to have him here. He's really popular. I mean, he's like a little star, you know, a Hollywood star.
This is the last man.
People all over the world have written about him, and people are coming here to film him, people are coming here to photograph him. We have a calendar for Sudan because we don't want to have more than one film crew or one journalist coming to visit him during a day because he needs to rest. He's got followers on Facebook and Instagram. You know, he's got his own hashtag. So if you search for Last Male Standing on Twitter, you will see that he's quite popular. I will go as far as saying that he's the most popular rhino on the planet. A lot of people have heard about Sudan because of what's happening to the species.
This is not a Kodak moment.
It's a real shame that it's now that people are coming to see Sudan. But bottom line is, people are interested in crisis, aren't they? And this is a crisis.
Sudan's kind have roamed our planet for some 50 million years. He's a northern white rhino, a subspecies once abundant in Central Africa, but which today is on the edge of extinction, with just three animals known to be alive. Sudan and his two female companions.
We have two northern
Sudan's keeper, Zach Matai, says, we have two northern females called Najin and Fatu. They can't be pregnant the natural way, since Sudan's getting too old and he's not capable of mounting them. Only three left in the whole world is very serious, so I'm getting worried. A team head to an emergency meeting of the African Rhino Specialist Group.
This is a very big problem, because how you can save a species which is already declared as extinct? That's why science has to come in.
So everybody, welcome to this meeting. We are very, very privileged to have very, very expert people at this table. There are veterinarians here, there are reproductive experts here, there are conservationists here.
I spent 22 years living with the northern white rhinos in the wild. Despite everything we've done, you know, we're down to reduced to a small known number. It's terrible to have got to this stage.
This meeting of experts, global experts, is going to try to find a way of introducing emerging technology into the Northern White Rhino Rescue Program, which is extremely challenging.
We're trying to find a way of making sure that these animals continue to exist. We're racing against time because there's only three animals left on the planet, of which only two are females. And Sudan is an old rhino. He could die tomorrow.
This rhino lived for several millions of years on our planet.
Yeah, he looks quite active. Yeah.
And it would still live another several millions, but the perversity of going for the horn brings them into this situation. And I think humans did that, and humans have the responsibility to correct that.
The tale of how Sudan came to be the last male on the planet begins 40 years ago, when he was just a baby.
Grainy archive footage of the Shambeh Game Reserve in South Sudan in 1973.
There's no picture, photograph of Sudan as a baby. He was actually born in South Sudan, in an area where there were not many people. But like all baby rhinos, he would have stuck close to his mother.
Dr. Kez Hillman-Smith.
When it was really hot, he might have been sheltering under her to be in the shade, or they would both be sitting under a tree or by a bush. He'd be very close to her everywhere, going everywhere, very close with her. At his age, he would have been going between the grass, but his mother would have been holding her head over the grass.
The baby rhino trails its mother through the long grass.
And they call to each other, little meow, 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 meow. Little mews that rhinos call to each other with as a contact call so they don't get lost.
It's the one time in a rhino's life when they are hugely vulnerable is when they're small. Probably their biggest threat are hyenas, number one. Number two, probably lion. And of course, human beings. That little fella, all he wants to do is just be with his mum. And he knows that's his only chance. Get separated from his mum, he's terribly stressed out.
Sudan was 2 years old. He was the youngest of the whole lot that we caught.
Anne Olive Croner.
It was the Chipperfield family's sort of brainstorm to start safari parks. And it was a new concept, totally new way of showing animals, wild animals. Longleat was the first one in the world, and I happened to get a job there. Richard Chipperfield started setting up safari parks in many other countries in Europe. So obviously he needed more and more animals.
A jeep hurtles round a bend, then speeds among giraffes.
It was exhilarating, it was great fun, I enjoyed it. You rope the animals, and then everybody grabs the animal from all angles.
A giraffe's loaded on a trailer.
And then take it back to camp. You have to remember, in those days, there was so much wildlife around. Herds of 1,000 or more elephants was not uncommon at all. I don't think anybody sees that many elephants in one herd today. So it was like, sure, you take a few individuals to go to safari parks so people in Europe can see these animals and appreciate them.
When the Chipperfields wanted someone to go out and join the capture team, I quickly volunteered and was accepted, and within a few days, there I was in Africa.
Peter Litchfield, a Chipperfield employee.
in 1974, Richard asked me to take some of our crew and go up to Shamba in South Sudan because he had heard that there were northern white rhinos up there.
A map of Africa.
In the years preceding Sudan's birth, a wave of heavy poaching dramatically reduced the number of northern white rhinos, driving the survivors into increasingly remote areas.
Well, it was an adventure because South Sudan was seriously primitive. This was quite a rare species. And we had an actual order to catch six, two males and four females. We have to find the right sort of size. Something that's definitely weaned, but not too grown either. So that they were pretty easy to shape, you could say. They would tame down and adjust easier to a different life.
Gliding above rhinos.
When we went catching, first job in the morning, I used to go up with the pilot and float around in the sky like a vulture. And we'd fly around until we found the rhinos. And then it was just a question of being able to get them on the move, nip in, steal one.
A rhino scampers.
My pole was going directly behind the animal's head, that far, so he couldn't see me. Couldn't see my rope. It came to that split second, and then I knew that all I got to do was that. I can remember catching Sudan. He put his head straight through my noose and got him. I don't think I ever felt that I was doing wrong, but I suppose I couldn't help but have some sympathy. An animal being taken away from the herd or from mothers, it can't have been easy.
Sounds crazy, but in a way, we were saving them from the risk of poaching.
What would have happened to Sudan if you hadn't captured him?
He'd be dead. For sure. Long time ago. They all would.
Two flatbed trucks filled with people.
Annie saved the six rhinos, and then eventually they moved them out from there and took them into Uganda and on the train down to Mombasa, then the ship from Mombasa to Europe, and then headed into the communist bloc, into Czech Republic, Czechoslovakia as it was then.
Black and white film of a giraffe licking a man's face.
The rhinos were an actual order from Joe Wagner. He was a TV personality in Czechoslovakia, as it was then. He had a weekly show about wildlife. And he was the director for Dvorkralovo Zoo, collecting all sorts of various species.
From an ostrich to an image of Joseph Wagner holding a small zebra in his arms. In Dvorkralov in the Czech Republic, Joseph Wagner's family home is a large detached mansion with a gable roof. Joseph's daughter, Lenka, is with his granddaughter, Veronika.
Oh, she will not talk English at all.
This is Sudan.
Yes.
My father took six to Czech Republic, to Czechoslovakia.
And actually, I remember my grandfather, whatever he had time, he came, he jumped in this little corridor, I don't know how he said, and he was talking to them. They always came, he whistled on them, he has his own special whistle. He whistled on them, they were far, far away. He whistled and they came to him, and he was just like petting them and telling them everything will be all right and they are in a safe place in the world. And it was a really touching story. Yeah.
This is a wide-lipped rhinoceros, and it's got this wide mouth because it eats lots of grass. We don't have a fence. It's much nicer when you can look them in the eyes. Of course, there has to be some kind of protection because otherwise the rhinos could kill the visitors.
Safari Dream from Czech National TV in 1979. Lenka says, this was the time of the Iron Curtain, the Cold War. My father believed that people were missing out on freedom, the freedom to travel and see new things in the world. He said, you know what, if the English and the Americans and Germans can do safari parks, then why can't we? A man sitting by some animal enclosures says, back in the early 1970s, everything in Czechoslovakia was grey, nothing was happening. There was one TV channel, and it was in black and white. You could only get bananas at Christmas. And if you got hold of a Led Zeppelin record, you were just the coolest guy around. And then, suddenly, there's this guy from Dvor who's travelling to Africa and bringing all these animals back. It was unbelievable. And that's why I fell for this place. Two chimps playfully tussle in a pen. Lenka says, Dad didn't just want one example of each species. He didn't just want Grevy zebras or Chapman zebras. He wanted every subspecies of zebra, and the same went for rhinos. Josef Wagner, director of the Dvor Králov Zoo.
Our aim is not only to display these animals. We want them to reproduce. I want these animals to survive in the new home, so in the future, our nation's children will have the chance of coming face to face with them.
The man beside the animal enclosures, Jan Jarek, is a zookeeper of Dvor Králov. He says, we had northern white rhinos in all of these stalls. They had seven stalls. A rhino stands behind bars in its darkened enclosure. Jan says, there were six who came from Africa, but we also brought over a female called Nasima from a safari park in England. This stall is where Sidan lived for almost all of his life. Archive footage of Sidan beside a gully in a large outdoor enclosure. Jan says Sidan was a really calm animal. He liked people. He was really mild. They were animals who'd let you do incredible things. They come when you call. They allow you to stroke them. They let you shower them, oil their hooves. Over time, they got used to captivity. I guess they had no choice. Lenka says, we didn't actually ride them, we didn't dare. I know the whole world would be furious at me for saying this, and the animal protection people will be after me, but this is what happened. They'd all be lined up in a row, we'd shout go, and then leapfrog over them. And the one who leapfrogged all of them was the winner. Poor rhinos. Dr. Pete Morkel, wildlife veterinarian.
Don't get me wrong, certainly the folk who had the northern whites in captivity, you know, they're good people and they tried terribly hard to give them as natural an environment as possible. But unfortunately, they never could give them what they had in the wild. And that is one of the huge issues about what happened to the northern whites.
In Nairobi, Kenya, a dog scampers across a shady clearing by an arched dwelling, while a warthog stands nearby. Indoors, Kez climbs a staircase to a landing where there's a stained glass window depicting a rhino grazing in grassland.
Well, this is a stained glass window that's Garamba. I wanted to put something here that was really Garamba. As you can see, there's the rhino at the bottom, the long grass, and the blue is supposed to be the Garamba River curving away, and Mount Bagunda in the background.
Sort of memorial.
Well, sort of, yes.
She's flying a small plane.
I've been reliving so much of it. Just thought it was a nice thing to have in one's house.
Kez is driving a Jeep, which bounces through a muddy puddle.
It was the end of the 70s. I started working in rhino conservation.
We found that northern white rhino populations were going downhill very rapidly.
Dr. Kez Hillman, a young zoologist, has been investigating the rhino slaughter in Africa.
Kez, just how endangered are the rhinoceros at the moment?
Well, some species of rhinos, there's only about a tenth of the numbers that there were in the past. So if anything desperate was to happen, the species could be wiped out.
In Africa and Asia, the rhinoceros is being ruthlessly hunted, and in some parts it's in danger of extinction. And all because of its horn, which in many places is regarded as an aphrodisiac.
All the countries where the northern white rhino unfortunately naturally occurred were incredibly unstable. And instability and civil war, etc., means increased poaching. And poaching, it makes money to keep the war going.
Armed conflict across Central Africa in the 1970s and early 1980s helped wipe out the northern white rhino population. Except for a small stronghold in the Garamba National Park.
Garamba is 5,000 square kilometres. It's a long, narrow park up in the north of the Democratic Republic of Congo. The remaining northern white rhinos in the world were living there. In March 1984, we were asked to come in to help to protect this precious population.
Kez joins armed guards on a cable ferry crossing a river.
When they first counted, there were about 14 rhinos left in Garamba. But clearly enough to turn things around and get a nice population going.
Kez leaves the boat. Armed guards perform manoeuvres.
Obviously, security is the most important issue. We started up law enforcement monitoring, training groups of guys from the local town. It was always a concern when you've got a very small population like that and they are in, you know, a relatively dangerous area because there's still war going on in Sudan. And it's a risk. But I believe it's really important to protect them in their natural habitat rather than in zoos, because it's clearly a perfect habitat for them.
The survival of the northern white rhinos was now dependent on the success of two tiny populations. 15 who roamed free in Africa, and 7 kept behind the Iron Curtain in Czechoslovakia.
A huge map of Africa looms over the entrance to the safari park. Archive footage of a bearded young man in tracksuit bottoms cleaning and feeding a rhino. Jan says Mirek Svitalski was the keeper who looked after the rhinos from the very beginning. He was the most experienced keeper here, absolutely in control of the rhinos. Eva Svitalski, a rhino keeper and Mirek's wife, says we talked about the rhinos constantly. We didn't talk about anything else in our house. Sudan's trying to mount another rhino, but just balances his legs on top. Eva says, mostly, Sudan didn't correctly mount the females. He'd climb on top and wouldn't know what to do next, so we had to teach him. Rhino keeper Mirek Svitalski.
It's pretty obvious that we can't leave it up to nature to make sure this species survives. There are so few of these animals left, we've got to step in and help.
Eva says quite often Mirek had to, you know, give him a helping hand. An old photo shows Mirek crouching beneath Sudan, directing the rhino's mammoth penis towards the female. Jan says one female, Nasima, started having babies with Sudan. I guess Mirek's work was paying off. Archive footage of a newborn rhino struggling to stand on its feet. A little male was born called Sunni. Then Nabir was born. The third one to be born was Najin. And Nasima was the mother to all of them. Joseph.
Here in Chile, Czechoslovakia, we are breeding this tropical African animal, Our zoo is famous because it's one of the few zoos around the world involved in reproducing these rare rhinos.
A group of jaded-looking rhinos lying in a dusty enclosure. Jan says, we thought the whole thing was taking off, but sadly it wasn't to be. There was mating, it looked promising, but everything started to stall. Hiri Vahala, the Dua Kral of Zuvet, says, the problem was in 1992 we lost Nasima, our only breeding female. Old film of Hiri inserting his arm into a rhino's vagina. He says, with other females it was a mystery. Why weren't they reproducing? In archive footage, Sherry says, we're trying to trigger the rhino's reproductive cycles, either using physiological stimulation or medication. Speaking now, he says, we tested the urine, we examined the dung, we analyzed the hormones. Jan says, we tried everything possible and impossible, but nothing worked.
Nic prostě nevycházelo.
Tak zoologická zahrada.
Here he says, the zoo was funded by the state, so it wasn't short of money. The problem was that we couldn't travel to the west. We were stuck behind our nation's borders, so we couldn't learn how things were done elsewhere.
A nedostali se za hranice.
A wide river in the Garamba National Park in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Kez is in the passenger seat of a jeep, bouncing along a dirt track towards an airstrip, where a small plane's waiting. Pete.
Well, I guess by the early 90s, Kez and her team had stabilised the situation. The rhino were breeding up nicely, population increasing, and I think she was now comfortable to say, let's get to know a bit more about these rhinos.
Kez adjusts her headset. The propeller spins. Then the plane takes off.
In Garamba, I was trying to observe the northern white rhino's natural behaviour, and you're trying to understand what makes a population survive and grow under natural conditions.
Kez pilots the plane across savannas, where rhinos roam free in lush grassland.
What I found was that, like with every African rhino species, the dominant males fight for and hold a territory, and they defend that against other dominant males. And you would get fighting between males at that stage.
With all rhino, the dominant male basically has got his strut of stuff, hold his area.
Rhinos lock horns.
All of this competition is terribly important to fire them up. Their testosterone levels are up, and they're good for breeding.
Cares.
The males will leave dung and urinate around their territory, so another male coming in will think, oh dear, he's here, I better stay away, or I better be wary, or and a female will, oh, he's here, you know, let's go in there.
An infant rhino slowly traipses through long grass to find an adult lying on its side in a small clearing.
In Garamba, it was just a very healthy situation, and they were just producing babies all the time. That was wonderful. Whenever you see, you know, see a new calf, oh, so-and-so's had a baby, you know, and we'd decide what we were going to call it.
Pete.
Kez was hugely successful. These animals were now safe in Garamba. You know, this is where they'd evolved. This is where they'd always, you know, done well. You know, the white rhinos were in paradise.
By the mid-1990s, the rhino population in Garamba had more than doubled to 31. In captivity, there had been three births, but also two deaths. And as Cold War tensions eased, three were lent to San Diego Zoo in the hope that they would breed there.
In 12 years, the rhinos in Garamba had doubled, and the rhinos in captivity weren't doing so well. You know, they're in concrete enclosures, and of course they would be leaving dung in those areas and then going back, and another one would be coming out, and you know, so it was quite confusing for the rhinos. They seem to develop the most peculiar shaped horns because they can't rub them in the same way that they do in the wild. It's a very unnatural situation for them.
Joseph.
I'm no longer very optimistic. They're just vegetating here. They're living in conditions which look good, but don't provide for their biological needs.
By that stage, Sudan had spent almost 20 years in captivity. Who knows what went on in his mind? We'll never know. Physiologically, I think there must be something negative happening, something, you know, less than perfect. It must have taken a long time to make peace with this different environment he's in.
Sudan's head-to-head with a female rhino. Hiva says, sometimes Sudan would really lose his temper. If he wasn't in the mood, he'd just charge at the female, and usually he'd injure her. The female scrambles around an enclosure as Sudan pursues her. Jan says, never underestimate a rhino. Sometimes they let you stroke them like household pets. Sudan's tussling horns with the female rhino. Jan continues, but they're still powerful beasts. You can never trust 100%. All it takes is one little mistake, and it can end up as badly as it did for Mirek. Eva says, you want to know how it happened? The day before, we'd put a female in with Saddam, but he just didn't like her. Saddam and the female are in a head-to-head skirmish. Eva says, and he just picked her up by his rear legs with his horn and tore a hole in her skin. Mirek said he'd go and have a closer look at her, even though I told him not to. And you just can't imagine. This terrible, terrible colossus just turns around. She looks at him, spins around in the air, scoops Mirek up and throws him against the wall. And that was the end.
Toho Mirka nabral a hodil ho prostě proti zdi a byl konec.
Tearfully, Eva puts her hands over her face.
Žádný zvíře prostě...
I've always said that it wasn't the rhino's fault. It's never an animal's fault if it attacks you. It's us who are to blame.
Takže jste vlastně zodpovědná sama za to, co se vám stalo.
Lenka says, my father became terribly conflicted about the whole project. He often said, am I right to tear these animals from their homeland and take them far away? Will they be happy here? Will they live as they're supposed to?
Budou tam ta zvířata šťastná? Budou tam vlastně fungovat tak, jak fungovat mají?
Pete.
You can imagine, it was clearly a very difficult situation. As the numbers of northern whites became less and less, these animals became more of a valuable draw card for the zoo. I'm just saying it's a possibility that folk might have hung on to them longer than they should have, because they knew people were fascinated. Hey, let's go and have a look at them before they're all gone.
Keeping rhinos in zoos is not totally natural, but on the other hand, it's important for people, you know, in the West to be able to see these animals and to realize the importance of conserving them in the wild. And as we now see, they're an important backup because, you know, you can't always predict what's going to happen in Africa.
Congo is sliding ever deeper into chaos.
The Sudanese government says it's putting down a rebellion in Darfur.
There's fighting on the streets of Kinshasa tonight, and this war could spread across Central Africa.
There's no illusions about, you know, the potential for instability in Garamba. She knew that it had always been a very unstable part of Africa, so anything could happen, and yes, anything did happen.
In 2004, we suddenly detected these groups of horsemen. These guys are actually a sort of mix of tribes. They're generally known as the Mbororo, and they are age-old elephant hunters from Sudan. But the war had changed things. They're now armed with AK-47s and rocket launchers and hand grenades.
Kez stands in the back of the truck with armed guards.
We set up observation posts on hills and reinforcement posts. But still, they were sort of advancing towards the elephant and rhino areas. One day I happened to be in the radio room, and they suddenly started calling on the radio about cheval, cheval. There were horses in the park. We jumped into the plane and flew out over that area. We flew along the Akagaramba River. We found a couple of guys on horseback under a trail of donkeys loaded with what was probably ivory and rhino horn.
In a grassy clearing, a blurred aerial image of the donkeys.
When we went back and we surveyed the area where they'd been, it was just a devastation of rhinos massacred everywhere. It was a real huge massacre. There was a 9-year-old female who was killed just down here. You know, she'd had her horn absolutely hacked off at the front. You know, she was quite young. She was a perfect reproductive age female. You know, it was a real tragedy. It is every time that you find them dead.
A man stands behind a row of rhino skulls. He positions the upper and lower jaws of a skull together.
Later on, any rhino skulls that were found were brought in. And we, you know, identified them for sure. We did a survey in July that year, and we could only find 14 rhinos at that stage in the park. By December, I did another survey and could then only find 9 rhinos. And then in 2008, they didn't actually see any.
Her plane lands on a grassy airstrip.
We didn't quite get it right in Garamba. I know that we did the best we could, that circumstances that were not usually conservation issues, they were political and power issues, were what generally caused the problems. And that's so often the case.
It's been the story across Africa in the last 30, 40 years how wildlife populations have been decimated as a result of political instability.
And they were all killed?
They were all killed. There are no northern white rhino left in Garamba, that's for sure.
At Dwar Krolov Zoo, flamingos standing beside an imposing mansion, then two antelopes on a grassy mound.
My predecessors spent about 40 years trying to keep the northern white rhinos alive and, you know, to give them the best possible conditions for breeding.
And it is difficult to judge decisions that were made in the past. But today, it's obvious that we still feel responsibility for them. Now we are in the basement of a zoo. And this we enter into archive. We have a library here, and we have diaries in which we wrote all the main things that happen to animals that we breed here. from 1975 to 2009, Sudan's life is here.
Jan Stayskal.
By 2009, the situation in the zoo was like, I wouldn't say desperate, but people believed that it would be good to do something, to try something else.
A large wooden crate.
Time was running out, you know. These are five animals in captivity. They are now some of the last representatives of this subspecies in the world. But it was sort of my idea to see if putting the four most healthy ones back in a natural environment would improve the breeding. We just had to get them out and give them a go.
The crate's placed in a lorry, which leaves the zoo under police escort. At night, as snow falls, the timber box is loaded on board a huge cargo plane. Gita Fuxova, the Czech ambassador to Kenya, says, "Dear Czech rhinos, you're really lucky to be spending the winter in the heat of Africa. We'll see you in Kenya in a few days." Hinek Monicek, the Czech deputy foreign minister, says, "My dear rhinoceroses, remember, we're not sending you on a tourist trip. You're going there to work, so make love and multiply." Gita strokes the outside of the crate, then the plane takes off. Zookeeper Jan Jarek says, "Saddam was 10,000 meters up in the air, and he was just munching away as if he was in his stall. He was really chilled out." On a map, an animated plane shows the route between the Czech Republic and Nairobi. A fleet of yellow lorries travels along a dusty track. Richard Veen, CEO of the Ol Pejeta Conservancy.
I was there when Sudan walked out of his crate and put his foot on African soil for the first time in 30 years. Yeah, it was a pretty extraordinary experience.
A group of photographers are poised as some keepers lift the door to the crate and Sudan inches out.
The keepers from the Czech Republic, they had this sort of crazy Czech language, you know, and the keepers talking to them, and hey, you know, somewhere along the line, I guess old Sudan had learned Czech.
The keepers shake hands with one another.
You could just see happy rhinos. You could see definitely an improvement in their health, their whole sort of demeanor. They had more freedom and lovely climate here, and things were looking very positive. We might just have pulled it off.
So a lot of things changed for the better and gave us hope that this process of bringing them back to Africa was going to result in not only mating activity, but successful pregnancies. They started mating pretty quickly. Now, the problem was, when mating activity happened, it never resulted in a pregnancy. It was then that we started looking more closely at the reasons why.
In Berlin, at the Leibniz Institute for Zoo and Wildlife Research, Professor Thomas Hildebrandt.
We work with elephants, tigers, lions, giant panda, octopus. Well, the main goal of our activities is to understand reproduction in wildlife, especially in endangered species. 2 years ago, they brought our team in to examine the two remaining females in Ol Pejeta. We did ultrasound examination. We found dramatic pathological changes on them. We found that if there's no ongoing reproduction, then it has a negative impact on the ovaries, the uterus. These females already shut down their reproduction. They were not more reproductively active.
Sadly, the truth of the matter is, because the females hadn't bred for such a long period in zoo conditions, they were now no longer able to conceive.
By the time this discovery was made, the remaining captive rhinos in San Diego and the Czech Republic had all died. And in Ol Pejeta, one of the four rhinos who had returned died suddenly of a heart attack. The world population now stood at just three.
Oh, that big boy. Oh, little big boy. Oh, little big boy. Oh, little big fella. Oh, little big fella. Oh, little big chap.
Sack says Saturday the 22nd of October, Sudan's activities started reducing and he spent most of his time resting inside the pen. It seems that his hind leg is really getting weak. We supplied him with feeding inside the pen since he refused to come out of the pen.
What are you thinking, big chap?
Maybe having some small dreams of when he was a little fellow in Sudan all those years ago.
Rainfall.
He's definitely a bit more rickety on his legs. He's definitely a bit more frail. He struggles to get up in the morning. His back leg hurts him. So, you know, yeah, he's an old man. We have to expect that he will die sometime soon.
I'm just afraid now. If the other leg starts to become weak, the right leg becomes weak, we've got a problem.
Either what will happen is he'll have a heart attack and he'll fall over dead, or he will, if he gets into a position where he can't move, which brings lots of complications for big-bodied animals, then eventually you'd have to think of euthanasia. You'd have to put him out of his misery just like you would do an old dog. But the truth is, even if Sudan dies, we can still save the species. And it's morally incumbent upon us to try to make this happen.
At the Institute in Berlin, Thomas heads to a laboratory where he dons a pair of safety goggles, then takes the lid off a huge vat which spews white steam.
These are specially protected cryo containers which have an alarm system which calls us when something is going wrong.
He pulls out a small metal container.
And in here are the samples from the different rhinos. It is really the backbone of the program. That's sperm samples. You have to have a quick look. That's straws where the sperm is stored. We have samples here from the northern white rhino, which are all dead. We also have samples from Sudan in Ol Pecheta. That makes 4 males, which we can use for the in vitro fertilization program. There is no way that these animals can reproduce natural-wise. The only way to help would be to use science, very advanced reproductive science.
Although there's plenty of sperm stored in Berlin, the scientists will also need eggs from the 2 remaining females in Ol Pecheta. They plan to harvest these eggs, known as oocytes, fertilize them with northern white rhino sperm, and transfer the embryos into a herd of surrogates, the closely related but less threatened southern white rhinos. The resulting calves could form the basis for a new generation of northern white rhinos.
In vitro fertilization in cattle and horses is a regular occurrence. The problem is it's never actually been done in rhinos as a species. This process has to be perfected before the last remaining females die. If those females die tomorrow, which could happen for whatever reason, then the last remaining repository of northern white rhino eggs would be lost.
Speeding along a dual carriageway.
We have to act very quickly because Najin is already 26 and Fatu is 15, so the biological clock and the window, time window we can be successful is very short.
It's quite a big burden when you do something new that you can't fail, but in this case, no failure allowed.
Thomas drives through a large gate into Schwerin Zoo in northern Germany. Now in a bear pen, he points to a rhino behind some metal bars.
That's a female we do.
Before they act as surrogates for the northern whites, captive southern white rhinos have another role to play. IVF has never been successfully carried out on rhinos before, so the scientists will practice on this closely related subspecies.
In any other animal, this procedure is pretty straightforward, but a rhino being so large and long, and it's it needs all these special equipment, which makes the whole procedure very, very difficult.
A two-ton animal is challenging. Now, it's a very long distance. We can't reach the ovaries with a hand. Therefore, we have to go 1.5 meter inside, and that is impossible to do it via the vaginal approach, which is the standard procedure in humans, cattle, horses. We have to go through the rectum. Carla is her name. Carla.
Do you think that she's nervous?
Yeah. Oh, I think we are more nervous.
A keeper fires a sedation dart into the side of the rhino's head. The animal scuttles around its cage, then another dart shot into the opposite temple. The rhino scurries around the pen some more, then gently drops to the ground within a mound of straw.
I see the obstacles. I'm not stupid. I'm a scientist. There are a lot of still unsolved problems.
But we have a species here which is nearly extinct due to human activity, and we have maybe the tools in our hand to stop that.
We take the mounted ultrasound probe about a meter inside the animal, and then inside the animal you have to find the ovary and then hold it at the right position for Thomas to go with a needle into the ovary, aspirating the oocyte out. It's a lot of effort, a lot of time, and also money and resources, but there's not many other options.
We operate with our needle very close to a very large blood vessel. And if we puncture that, then we would lose the patient.
Good. Now we'll see what we find.
Liquid on a petri dish.
So far, so good. The whole procedure went really well. We aspirated the oocytes, hopefully, and Thomas is trying to find them at the moment under the microscope.
Thomas is looking through a microscope.
We found 6 oocytes. I lost one, so we have 5 oocytes.
We'll send them off to a lab, and then they add the sperm, they inject the sperm.
Okay.
And we'll know more in about 3 days whether this works or not.
Robert Hermes, rhino reproductive expert at the IZW.
Okay. If we can prove that this procedure is not doing harm to animals, and we are capable to produce embryos out of that, then we would test that on Fatu and Najin. Cheers, cheers.
The rhino's eggs are couriered nearly 800 miles to a specialist lab in northern Italy. There, after they are fertilized, they should begin dividing.
In animation, the sperm divide.
Within days, they'll grow into a bundle of cells known as a blastocyst. Only if they reach this stage have they got a good chance of becoming a healthy baby rhino.
6 weeks later, Thomas is in his kitchen pouring a hot drink. Then he leaves the house and makes his way to work.
Science is characterized by failures, by successes, but also by failures. We are quite disappointed about this outcome. One of the oocytes developed into an embryo, but at a very early stage, it stopped. We have a problem with the whole development of a blastocyst.
A sedated rhino lies on the floor of its pen.
The failure to produce a viable rhino embryo means the scientists have had to recruit more southern whites from zoos across Europe to practice on.
We are close, we are not there, but we are close. We made a lot of progress over the last months, but science is not predictable. We can't say at the end we will be for sure successful, we can't.
We now know that we have a power to destroy the rhinos. What we try to do now is actually to see whether we have a power to save them. We have to accept that we might fail.
A bright sun shines over a vast savanna. A man walks towards a lone tree, which stands desolate on the grassy plain. Elodie Sampera.
The day Sudan goes, it's going to be hectic, you know, in terms of media, and people are going to want pictures, and they're going to want to write about him and stuff like that. So I'm afraid to say that we are ready. We've got a press release ready just for the day he goes, just because we need to be, you know. I don't know if the zoo is going to want his bones back, to be honest, because, you know, in the end, he is their animal. And if we're not allowed to keep his bones, then we would definitely put a headstone for him at the Rhino Cemetery.
Memorial plaques near the tree commemorate the loss of Max, a male white rhino, and Batchian, a female black rhino. Sudan trudges slowly in his enclosure while Zach's raking a patch of sand. He says, this is Sudan's bed. When you really take great care of something, either a human or an animal, it can extend its lifetime and it can help him last longer.
In case anything happens, my life will change because...
If anything happens, my life will change because I'm used to him very much. I'll feel lonely. Zach leans against Sudan.
In an ideal world, we wouldn't need to try to save the northern white rhinos.
Sudan.
The breeding program in Czechoslovakia, it would have been really successful. You know, they would flourish in the Central Africa. They would roam the large savannas there. Unfortunately, this didn't happen. And it's only due to human activities.
Sudan continues to be cared for at Old Pejeta. The IVF scientists have yet to create a viable rhino embryo. They hope to have a breakthrough later this year.
I think it's a dilemma we're going to face more and more in the years to come. You know, there are, for so many species, just, you know, tiny populations left. And would it be best to put them in captivity or best to take their chances in the wild? There are some species which have done extremely well in captivity, but I think we understand now that some animals just don't do very well in a zoo environment, that they probably shouldn't be there. You know, safety from being poached, but not breeding. Ultimately, it's as lethal, essentially, as having him in the wild with a threat of poaching.
The northern white rhinos are just a symbol of what we do to a natural world. It's very visible with the northern white rhinos because we witness the last three animals, and we witness, you know, they disappearing actually in front of our eyes. But there are many, many other species disappearing, but we cannot see it so clearly like we see it with the northern white rhinos.
The names of dozens of animals appear, including a mountain gorilla, whale, Indian elephant, black rhino, orangutan, tiger, snow leopard, sea lion, and chimpanzee.
Oh, nobody loves the rhinoceros much. If you ask the reason why, they will tell you because of his scaly touch or his hard and glittering eye. But should you ask a truthful man, you will get this quick response. I do not trust that thing on his nose, the bodger on his bonce. Oh, the bodger on the bonce, the bodger on the bonce. Oh, pity the poor old rhino with the bodger on the bonce.